This is TNNX. It's the bonus edition of the Naughtiest Naughty, the occasional bonus edition that we're still kind of trying to figure out what it could be in the future. I think for series two, it's kind of just been the bonus songs, hasn't it? We've not really, we've both been pretty busy. I mean, you've got a child. We've just been talking about how busy you are with your child, which is so selfish of you, of course.
Yeah.
No, Felix is lovely, but yeah, it does take a lot of your time, I guess.
But since we started doing this from home in March the first time,
yeah,
you know, he's got a completely different personality and doing things in the house now isn't really actually feasible. So there is now probably what's 40 minutes travel for me to try and get somewhere to do this each and every week. And then as the rules and restrictions come in, things change too. So it's just working with a different kind of timetable. And then, you know, we are chatty Cathys anyway, so things do get chucked over to TNNX. It depends how passionate we get, and we are getting lots of love for stuff from 2001.
Yeah, I think there's all the reason to do more stuff around this year because it's been such a good year.
Yeah, it's been good.
It's funny that when you think about, you know, when this podcast started in March, how old would Felix have been? It'd be about,
it was a year.
A year. Mm-hmm. When we get towards the end of this, if we're on course as to, you know, to how quick we're doing it at the current time, he'll be like six when this is
creepy.
When this main series comes towards an end.
Weird.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, that is pretty mental, actually, to be fair. Hello, 6 year old Felix.
I'll be nearly 30 by then. I'll be nearly 30 by then. You'll be,
oh my god.
I'm not gonna say it.
Oh no.
I just realized I'm not gonna say it. I'll take it back. Anyway, so this edition of the podcast is just for the songs we didn't have time for in the main episodes. They weren't in contention to be a winner, so it's easy just to sort of slide them out and put them in here. It's no disrespect to them. I feel like we always need to preface this because it's kind of like, it is kind of the waste paper bin of the tracks, but they're still top 10 singles.
Oh yeah,
they're still perfectly credible. I mean, some of them, there's one particular I'm really, really not bothered about, but generally speaking, these are all kind of good,
yeah,
you know, middling to good tracks that we have things to say about, still worth listening to. Certainly, I think with these tracks, we have to work a bit hard, don't we? Because we haven't really got anything nice to say. Well, we haven't got anything spectacular to say about them, but our dazzling wit has to do the rest of the work to really make the show a fully great listening experience.
Yeah, what you've got is you've got like some of the best musical talent in the world standing on a stage side by side, but yeah, we have to pick the ones that are going to win to make the main episode.
Yeah.
And yes, these are still very much stage worthy and being in that queue, but the order, these specific songs just get knocked down the pecking order a little bit.
Yeah. It's very much like the X Factor programme because we have to prioritise the best and the worst for the main episode. And this is the stuff that just didn't get onto the live shows, isn't it? This is the stuff that didn't get on the TV programme of the X Factor. It didn't get to the audition stage. They got the producers in the room, but they weren't good or bad enough to make it to the main stage of Simon Cowell.
Nah.
Yeah.
And here's me not sitting on a chair beside Cheryl or Danny Minogue yet on Discord to you.
No.
You know what I mean?
Me and my turtles onesie.
So it's a different experience. Yeah. Would we be good talent show judges? I think actually maybe from this, my ability to make decisions and to put forward reasons for chucking people out might be much more eloquent than what they would have been beforehand.
Aye.
But maybe we would be okay. I've done local talent show judging before as like lead judge for different things based on a radio station I work for, but very many. And actually the people that I was on the panel with were probably more experienced than me. They just used my brand pretty much to do it. But it's interesting. It's interesting.
I wouldn't like having somebody's life in my hands, like their fate depending on what can I say? Like what can I possibly say that's like I just wouldn't feel worthy of deciding the fate of someone's life. But
yeah,
maybe it'll come with time. Maybe by the end of this series, in like 4 or 5 years time, we'll just be like so cruel and cutthroat, and we'll be just tossing songs aside like McFly, get out of here, you shit, fuck off.
Yeah, I think it's difficult, actually, to be fair, because whenever I've done it, I think the first time I ever did it, like, everybody was brilliant, you know, to be in the actual, in a talent show like that was really, really good. And I don't know, if you're from the northeast of England, you might have heard of Kay Grayson.
Yes, she's brilliant.
So Kay Grayson was Kaya's whenever she was in this talent competition, and she was the person that I chose to win the competition, and she got to record some songs off the back of it. So that's one of her starting moments, so that's an interesting one. But Kay Grayson, definitely check her out. Very, very good.
Yeah.
But there was loads of great singer-songwriters in there too, but she stole the show.
I'm glad you've mentioned a woman, because there really isn't many in this episode of the TNNX,
Actually, which I guess
is kind of a good thing, because you know, we prioritise the women who are in the main episodes, and this is just kind of like, don't look too much at the fact it's all men in this episode. It's just how it's panned out.
Yeah, it really is.
All the women who've been on the podcast in 2001 have been so good or so bad, but mostly so good that they've made the main episode, so go figure.
Yeah.
So we'll get into tracks from Star Sailor, Shaggy, Chemical Brothers, which pains me to say it, but just didn't quite scrape in there. Better to come. Dane Bowers, his final single, Marty Pellow. By the way, we spoke about Liberty X in the podcast this week. You know, Kevin Sim from Liberty X, he's now the lead singer of Wet Wet Wet.
I read that somewhere recently and meant to tell you, but I wonder if we've read the same thing. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, it's crazy, yeah. Uh-huh. And he won The Voice as well. He won The Voice a couple of years ago, just like, he's had a mad one.
He would be a very good masked singer.
Yeah, oh, he would, wouldn't he?
Mm-hmm. He'd be a very good masked singer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that.
This is the first track from Eddie Grant. It's Electric Avenue with the Ring Bang Remix. So this is a track that was first released in 1983 and has been brought back in 2001 by Ring Bang for a remix. Now, Eddie Grant, Electric Avenue, isn't on Spotify.
Nope.
There's a weird bootleggy version that's not right. It isn't Eddie Grant. Mm-hmm. As happens, artists don't want things on Spotify for whatever reason. It could be a political thing. It could just be because they can't be arsed. I don't know. But that isn't on, and neither is the Ring Bang remix. So if you can pause this and go and find it on YouTube, it is there. It's 8 minutes long, so you maybe just need to listen to a flavour of it and get the idea. But we'll talk about it now. This is Eddie Grant, the Ring Bang remix that was brought back for 2001.
Yes. Had you heard this version before?
I couldn't recall it. I will have heard Eddie Grant around this time, though, because there was a Curry's advert that Eddie Grant Electric Avenue was on, because, you know, electricals.
Yes.
And that's how I know this song from as young as I do.
I always knew Eddie Grant, but this Ring Bang remix is why I know the lyrics and why I can sing along to it, because it was massive for me whenever we were younger. So this was one in like clubs and bars and things like that. So
yeah, it sounds like it was a big radio hit, and it sounds like, well, I know for a fact that the bootleg that was around in 2001 that is how it got to be, you know, played and on the chart, was estimated to be worth around $300,000 by NME in April 2001. So it was sought after, and then when it came out, it did pretty well. It got number 5 in the chart, so not bad.
Yeah, this was really big for me. So this is originally from the 1982 album Killer on the Rampage. The song refers to Electric Avenue in London, which was linked to the Brixton 1981 riot, but wasn't actually one of the main streets that was involved in it. So if you look at the history, it's very close. Mm. Things went down, but there are more significant streets. But yeah, and that actually sent me down a rabbit hole. I didn't know about the Brixton riots, because obviously I had enough going on in Northern Ireland growing up without looking at the Brixton riots. And again, we didn't have, and this is such a sad thing, in Northern Ireland, there was, as much as there's Catholics and Protestants, there was no diversity. I don't think I'd met a black person in real life until I'd come over to England. It just didn't exist in my nature. I had met, this is really stupid, I'd met a Chinese person because we had a Chinese restaurant in my town. We didn't have an Indian restaurant. Mm. We didn't have anything else, but I had met a Chinese person, I think two or three who owned the restaurant. And that was mostly my upbringing at that point. But so we've got a big, I think it's important that you read the history of the Brixton riots to kind of get this one. But this for me was a great remix to bring it to a new generation. Concerned that maybe there's so much depth to that actual track that has it numbed it a little bit and made it more of a floor filler when it really should have, there's more of a political value to that a little bit.
Potentially. It is, when you put it that way, it is weird to picture yourself kind of popping away on a dance floor to a track that's about, you know, quite a big race motivated riot that happened in a particularly heated time in British politics. Potentially, I think, as is always the case when these tracks go dance, is that they become the dance. Mm-hmm. That said, the integrity of the track is held together really well. I think, if you stripped away that dance element, it would just be the song. Like, all of the production elements of the original are there. Mm-hmm. It's all really intact. It's not much been done to it. It's just been an added layer of beats to it.
Yeah,
that work. I think it's solid.
Yeah, I do too. And it's that. So it's like, is it transformative? And I think that I would usually say, but the dance elements of it are so good that it's transformative. But the numbness does worry me a little bit. But do you know what? In many respects, this brought a song to me. So if I think about it, if I played a long game with this, right, I would never have known the words to Electric Avenue before. I'd have known the tune. You know when you're young and you know the tune to something that sounds familiar. I then sang the words to the chorus of this on nights out and stuff, not realising what it was. And then actually, as an adult then, if this came on, I'd be more likely to listen to it and go down that rabbit hole. Whereas if this one didn't exist, I'd have never gone down that. I would have never have understood the Brixton Riot. Mm-hmm. I would never have realised, you know, the how long the controversy about racial discrimination from police and stop and searches and things like that have existed. And then I probably wouldn't have realised how the fuck is it 2020 and we still have these issues, you know, really seriously. Mm-hmm. It's just, I'm so grateful for camera phones. Yeah, and people whipping their phones out and having each other's backs these days. And I'm not one for, I don't like when people get phones out and try camera thing. But some things need to be done.
If it's for clout, then go fuck yourself. But if it's to, you know, highlight the issues, then it needs to be done. What I find interesting, this is off Wikipedia, this is a straight lift off Wikipedia. When Eddie Grant first came out with the original, it was the early years of MTV, and they ran a lot of, I mean, I'm sure you saw the same thing there, so it was a lot of white people, basically. Billie Jean got aired, because that video is brilliant, and they realised, oh, actually, there's a market for black artists having their videos on this station.
So disappointing, isn't it?
And Eddie Grant was one of the ones who was around that time and became part of that pool, so he's one of the pioneers of black music on MTV, basically. And here we are in 2001, where you now have Eddie Grant, a black artist, on a dance track, and that kind of helps another generation of people, because dance music, if you go to Creamfields, you'll see that it's very white and male. He've got, I know Peter Black, who made the remix, is not a black male, but Eddie Grant is, and I find that encouraging, and I think
I think actually that's good, a really good point, considering dance music really all still stems from like black history. I think your point on that is actually really, really important. It's just, this was really groundbreaking in the 80s, and it's gone to people that it wouldn't usually have reached. So think maybe a way more important remix than we even realized, because it was a one-off and it wasn't part of a big Eddie Grant movement and let's do some albums, new single releases and stuff, it could be seen as a flash in the pan, but actually really important.
This shouldn't take long. It's not on Spotify. There's not even a music video on YouTube that you can watch. However, you can watch him perform it on
Emmerdale
Farm, as it might have been called back then. I'm not sure. Marty Pello, close to you. Go and check it out if you want. I'm sure you can already imagine what it sounds like. It's Marty Pello from Wet Wet Wet. It's going to be a croonery sort of ballady song, innit?
Yeah, so this is his debut solo single. It's a Hello Goodbye. You might know him from like Love Is All Around, from Four Weddings and a Funeral, originally The Troggs.
Sweet Little Mystery.
My mom loved Marty Pello. She was obsessed with him. Yeah, so if you are an Emmerdale fan, I don't even know. I'd stopped. This was probably me leaving Emmerdale because I used to watch soaps. And I remember I only got into soaps by school summer holidays. I remember going to Crackies near my house, which is a chip shop, coming back with a bag of chips, sitting down at the breakfast bar in the kitchen and turning it on and watching a plane crash.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, what the hell have I just watched? And then that was the first thing that ever got me into a soap. So I watched an Emmerdale plane crash, and then I knew the storyline, knew all the characters. There was Kathy Glover, who was leaving to emigrate to Australia. I'm not sure if she did or what happened with that storyline. But yeah, so Trisha, who was like, oh, Trisha, I'm Gobby. Won a radio competition on Emmerdale. And then it was to get to meet and greet with Marty Pello, brings him, and he comes in and sings this song, the full song,
in full.
Complete blatant ITV product placement of Close
shot,
to You in
shot
front of
everybody. In multi-camera. Like a real like Top of the Pops performance, but in the wall
pack. So about the song, lovely, romantic, vocally great because it's Marty, and I have written down officially passes the creepy test.
The
creepy test.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I mean, even the title, Close to You.
Yeah. Close to You. So officially a 2001 romantic track, but that's kind of all we've got to say. And number 9, and his only top 10 single as a solo.
If we'd done the Naughtiest 90, we'd hear this song. Or variations of this song a lot. I'm glad that in the year 2000 we're no longer getting these as much as we probably would have done in the previous decade. This isn't my cup of tea. I was very bored.
No. I think it is what it is, and it's just it's a well done to Marty.
Yeah, number nine. People bought it, so
yep,
it's one of those. What can we say? Okay, this is a bit of a shame, this one, because we're going to say goodbye to Dane Bowers, who I think has been an underrated part of this show over the last year and a half of doing the music, because he's been on big tracks with Victoria Beckham and, you know, made a big contribution to that. He's also had his own solo stuff. He's had his stuff as True Steppers. And it just never really took off for Dane, did it?
No.
It just never really lit the match.
But we all thought there was a massive back catalogue, didn't we? We thought there was way more going on with him, and actually there's not that many singles, which is devastating.
This is the final top 10 of Dane Bowers. It's called Another Lover. Oh, it's not on Spotify. I was going to play a clip, but we can't. It's not on Spotify. So we'll just go talk about it. If you want to go listen to it, please go and do. To give you a sense of what it's like, I'd say it's got, you know, Latin guitar vibes, almost like Santana Light in terms of its guitarness.
Mm-hmm.
Dane has this... last night, I'd done my prep, and I was watching The Jungle, and I went to go to the toilet, and I was just, you know, doing my business. Ones, if you must know. And I thought, I was just sitting there going, da-da-da-da-da. Dane Bowers, he's like the British Justin Timberlake. Oh my God, Dane Bowers is the British Justin Timberlake, except that, you know, didn't really have the same level of fame that Justin Timberlake had. But do you see where I'm coming from, though? Maybe this track in particular is kind of like, if you're going to compare anything to Justin Timberlake's back catalogue, you'd say maybe Senorita. But I think Dane has that same vocal range, has that same showboating ability to show off how much he can do. And I think his passion for the music is really clear. Mm-hmm. When you watch the video and you see them, you know, see him doing the performance where it's got the entire, you know, the entire band laid out and you can see everyone playing the instruments and stuff, and he's at the centre of it all, you know, leading it and singing it and pinning it together. I think there's big Justin Timberlake vibes of this one, and it makes me sad that Dane didn't really catch on.
Yeah, so I can see the vibes in the sense that, you know, big boy band singer going off in a solo career, so I see that element of it. I do like the bass and the R&B vibes in the song. It's very, like, if you're trying to put it somewhere, it's very Save the Last Dance, and even like the very first Pink track, you've got it there. And we do have those Spanish guitars and stuff. I think, and I feel like, he sticks out like a sore thumb, and it's not the right vibe for him.
Oh.
And there's something odd about his placement. So like, he, that environment within the video that you're saying where he is around the band, and there's a breakdown, and then it comes in a cappella, and then it comes back up to a track. That's really great. But I don't think he's been given, and I don't know if he's produced them or what the crack is, but this is too out of date. This is 1999 and 2000, and this isn't fitting correct. We've done the Santanas, we've done that Everybody Wants to Be Lonely's, and he's not a Ricky Martin that can pull off an out-of-date track because of the brand and all of that kind of crack. He needed something bigger and better at this point. We haven't had that out of... The best thing has been out of my mind because it was futuristic and it was very UKG. But I do think... What I've got to say... So we've discussed some tracks that are very weird about the way that they catch out women, and it's a bit odd. I think this is a much more respectful way to call it a cheating woman, because that's what it's about. And I think it's one of the nicer ones that we've seen, you know, like if we think back to like Joe and Stutter. But Joe, again, the way that he's calling her out is a bit more aggressive. I think that lyrically, the way that Dane's done it, it's awfully British, you know. It's awfully polite way to call it, and it I like is. That about it, it. Is, I think that's lovely. I really like it. And I think actually lyrically, I think it's really rich. I think he vocally is brilliant.
Is.
I think the track was wrong. He doesn't fit a Spanish video. We have seen him come from the suburban London vibe. This guy at this point is Ayia Napa or London suburbia. To see him in Spain with Spanish guitars, it just doesn't really make sense, unless there's something more to that story that I don't know. But the Dane that I knew doesn't work. But I think the track itself lyrically could work as an Usher song.
Yeah, very feasibly. Yeah, I think Dane has been done dirty. I think it's a shame that this is the end of his journey at this point. There's been other things across his career. Like, he hasn't disappeared off the face of the earth here, because he has gone on to do other things. You know, he just a year later was presenting Pop Stars The Rivals Extra on ITV2.
Oh.
He actually wrote his own music industry satire sitcom, which had Lee from Steps and Nathan from Brother Beyond in it as well. So there you go. There's someone who's been in the music industry and now feels compelled to write a kind of a piss-take thing that comes from, presumably, you know, a lot of experience, with Lee from Steps, who probably also feels quite aggrieved to how things turned out, you know, being pushed out in the band and not having any real say as to why the band fell apart. You know, it was two of the five that chose to end it, and they had to kind of go along with it. Does that show to you that there's some animosity there as to how his journey ended? Or this particular solo journey fell apart? Because his album got cancelled.
I think he had the wrong team of people behind him. I think he had so much more to give that actually Dane could have been bigger. I don't know, was he unmarketable? I don't think so. No, I really wanted more from him. I think he could do stuff now that would be more interesting. Like, and I don't want to put him on reality TV, but I don't think he's done it. Has he done The Masked Singer? I think he'd be really good on The Masked Singer, somebody like that.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
He actually would, yeah.
He'd be good.
Yeah.
little coup for that one. But yeah, I wanted more for Dane, and I don't feel sorry for him, because I think what he's done generally in life is still brilliant with all of the things that he's doing. But I wish people had been more behind you.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Right, let's go. Alternative number 8 this week was from the Chemical Brothers. The first appearance from them, so I feel like we should do some catching up. These three tracks were all enormous in the 90s and kind of put them on the foundation of being one of the biggest alternative electronic art acts of the UK/the world. Set and Sun, first number 1 back in 1996. Followed up in 97 by Block Rockin' Beats, also number 1.
Back with another one of those Block Rockin' Beats!
And then in 99, Hey Boy, Hey Girl, at number 3. Which brings us up to the year 2001 and their tribal hit, their tribal anthem, It Began in Africa. Ka, 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 ka.
First single of the fourth album come thus, like Liam said, and it's on it came out on a white label release,
yes,
originally called Electronic Battle Weapon 5, which
Love
doesn't
it.
Sound as effective. Electronic Battle Weapon 5 doesn't work,
no.
But it does have a big sample in it as well, so it samples the track Drumbeat by Jim Ingram, and I'm kind of glad that it did sample that, to be fair, and that it was its name was changed, you know, too, because I think Electronic Battle Weapon 5 would have made it a bit too trippy.
Yes.
For something that is well trippy, it needed to be called It Began in Africa. I think something normalised about this track worked in its favour.
Yeah.
Love the conga in it.
Yes.
Bongos for me. Yes, yes, yes. I'm a sucker for bongos and steel drums, right? Really easy way to suck me in.
Yeah.
The vocals always creep me out, and actually I find the Jim Ingram vocal way less creepy than what they've kind of done with it. Oddly enough, as much as I can see how this is complete genius and brilliant, it gives me a really negative reaction.
Oh, really? In what way?
I think it's too trippy.
Okay.
For me, and I've loved historically what Chemical Brothers have done, and I know that they have to push boundaries and stuff, and I can see, you know, as a music presenter, I can see how this is fantastic, but I don't understand what it does to me. It makes me feel vulnerable, and I don't like the way that it makes me feel vulnerable, and I do think that it's kind of fighting with itself in many places, but I kind of feel like maybe this is what, I've never taken acid and I don't do drugs, but I feel like maybe this is what the starting point of being an acid would be like, and it freaks the life out of me, and I think that I wouldn't be in the scenarios where you would experience that track the way it was kind of designed to be experienced.
Yeah, I had the feeling you would say that. I was going to ask you actually, because this gives me like sort of dirty rave vibes, and I've never seen you as much of a dirty raver. I've seen you as a clubber, but never like a grotty, grimy like raver to this kind of thing, and that's kind of answered my question really. To me, the Chemical Brothers are what they do so well consistently over the course of their career. I mean, this one's an exception, and I do wish we were speaking about a Block Rockin' Beats or a Hey Boy, Hey Girl or a Galvanize first. This is a weird starting point. Number 8 though, so it had mass appeal enough to chart in the top 10. I think there's always a sense of chaos in their tracks, but it's like a logical chaos, like it's tangible. What they tie together here, they make an enormous soundscape with the sounds they use. You've got the bongos, tribal drums, there's a fast pace to it with wildcats in the background going rah, 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 like a wildcat just tearing up a, a bit of, you know, discarded animal sort of thing. They create this world that makes sense, but it's just a complete like head mash. And that's just their strength. They do that so well, and I can't begrudge them that at all. I see myself as more of the rave kind of person, and this year especially, from being stuck in the house so much, I've listened to a lot of rave music, and this sort of thing has come into my ears more than other things have. I like it very much. It reminds me of, have you seen the show Peep Show, Scott?
Bits and pieces.
You ever seen the show Peep Show?
Yeah.
For those who have, there's a scene where Mark and Jez go to a class called Rainbow Rhythms because Mark's trying to get off with Sophie. And it's this thing where it's like music and it's all kind of like red, amber and green. You have to kind of like let your body go with the music sort of thing. And there's a track in that when it goes red that sounds a lot like this. And this gives me like big Rainbow Rhythms vibes. I like this very much. Very good. And I think they've done similar things to this over the course of their career. They've done so much, like Gorillaz.
Yes.
They do so many different sounds, all tied in the same sort of universe, but so sonically different.
Yeah.
The thing that reminds me of most recently from them was a track in 2019 called Eve of Destruction from the album No Geography, which sounds like this. Sonically, there's links. It's not the same, but it's similar, and they're great. And I got to see a tiny bit of them at Creamfields in 2019, like a minute or two of them at Creamfields, and it was a spectacle. Yes. That I'd love to see a full show of.
So I want to love this because I want to convince myself to love it, but there is something pre-programmed in my brain that freaks me out.
You can't force it.
No.
You can't force it.
But you chuck me out an Acid House track, and I can kind of go with it.
Mm.
But I see. How smart and how intelligent, and I feel like when I listen to this, I know what the vibe was in the studio whenever they were making it, you know what I mean? But I don't feel connected to that, but I do think there was very much lots of genius behind it, and I have so much respect for it in many, many respects.
You wouldn't be licking any stamps in their studio. You wouldn't be putting a stamp on an envelope and just licking a stamp by any chance, just in case.
No. And I do remember actually going in Sunderland, just going around bars with people that were drunk and giving them like stickers from a radio station that I worked with and just sticking them on them, you know, just for when the next day, whenever they come back, they go, "What's that?" And then turn on the radio. And I remember being in what was it called Lola's? Do you remember Lola's?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
In Sunderland?
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember just being in Lola's and this woman saw me with this sticker and she took the sticker off me, tore it in half and started chewing on it. I was like, she was munching on it like she was a giraffe. And this isn't a club, this is just a bar. And what was quite a nice bar with like very posh wallpapers.
Yeah.
I'm like, what are you doing? And then somebody had to explain to me, she thinks it's acid. And her boyfriend had to come over and start like fishing it out of her mouth at the same time. And I was like, I don't think that bar was very much this vibe because it was very much a funky house vibed bar.
Yeah.
And we didn't need her losing it like she was in the studio with the Chemical Brothers recording it began in Africa.
So from Michael Jackson to Janet Jackson, kind of. Now, I mentioned Samantha Mumba hosting SMTV Live earlier. Also on that show, performing Angel and this song, Love Me, Love Me, was Shaggy. But this version's not Janet Jackson. She didn't want to be on the album, it turns out. I mean, why would you not want to be on Shaggy's album? Who knows? Samantha Cole joined Shaggy for this version of Love Me, Love Me.
This was the follow-up to Angel and a big sample of Rose Royce's song Oh Boy. Sounds like this. Oh boy, I love you so. Never, ever, ever gonna let you go. I hope you feel the same way too. Much more romantic than what Shaggy's done. And also, we have got a sample of the Honey Drippers' Impeach the President. Relevant.
Relevant.
So Love Me, Love Me, right? My memory of this, and it spins out in my car every so often because I actually own it and I've had to pay 79p for it. And on one of my shows years ago, I had, do you remember Stushy?
Yeah.
The band?
Yeah, they were great.
So Stushy had to come on for a bit of a takeover, and they had some great tracks, and they were, their chart positions did not reflect how good they were. Yeah. I think most people remember them for like Blackheart, which was a brilliant track. And they came on and I let the three of them have one track each for a takeover. And one of them chose this track. So I had to play this on my dance show, which doesn't really fit, but it worked. And then randomly when I was in London a few months later, I was walking through London and I walked past her. And then I thought, is it too weird to stop her and say, "I remember the one that chose Shaggy, Love Me, Love Me" on my dance show. And I didn't have the balls to, so I just walked on. But what a strange word that I walked past her.
I know.
And then the next time I was in London, I walked past, you know, the two that eat the takeaways off, Come Dine With Me. What's that one where they watch telly?
Gogglebox.
I walked past one of the ones that sits and watches the telly on Gogglebox. She was walking about in a massive, massive expensive fur coat, or like some sort of like fake fur coat, but you could tell that it was dollar. And I saw her just marching about chanting to normal people in the street when she was like proper famous. But yeah, my Shaggy Love Me, Love Me experience is Stushy taking over one of my shows and playing it.
You know what I like about that story? About you know, seeing her in London and stuff. Is there anybody who likes this would dare go out in public? No, that's actually a joke. I didn't like Angel. I'm confused by the sexual politics of It Wasn't Me.
Yeah.
This one I am more, I'm more okay with. There's less to object to. I mean, there's things to object to, but in a different way.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody who's called themselves a sex machine has ever lived up to expectations. I don't like how he describes the woman in the first line the same way that I'd describe a KFC at Biker. sweet, succulent and fine.
Dear me, you... Oh.
Caravan of Love should be reserved for the House Martins and the House Martins alone. Shaggy did not need to say those words ever. And in his little ad-lib bit at the start, he says moist, moan and sweat in the same sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes. Yeah. Yikes. One, you know what I mean?
People shouldn't use the word moist. And two, you need to go to more different KFCs than the Biker KFC in Newcastle. There are better chicken shops than that one, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All the bits I like about this are the non-Shaggy bits.
Yeah,
you know,
completely.
So, Impeach the President, love it. Ooh boy, I love you so. I love it. I do agree with you. I'm in a less controversial place with his verses. There are still bits that are like, oh, really? I still don't think you should use the word moist, although I love the word moist because it makes me think of chocolate cake.
Yeah.
So that's me. Whereas other people, my the second place my brain goes to is the first place everybody else's brain goes to. And if you know me, that's really weird that you say moist and I think chocolate cake. But I do enjoy it.
Yeah.
I hate the fact that it's on my phone, and whenever I would drive my father-in-law's car, the Bluetooth comes on automatically and just shuffles what's on my iTunes.
Love me, love me, love me, sex machine.
Oh, there's some shockers in there like that come out that I've had to buy over the years that I do not like. And
face down, ass up. That's the way we like to fuck. Face down.
I have that anyway. No, I don't actually own that track, nor do I play it on any of my radio shows. But yeah, meh. Meh.
It's time for a band who, it appears to me from reading about them online, had a bit of a rough time in the industry just because other bands didn't really like them and they got picked on a bit. They give me kind of Top Loader vibes. They give me kind of Stereophonics vibes in some ways that we'll get to when we talk about Star Sailor. This is their first top 10 single. They had number 18 and number 12 at this point. This is from the debut album Love Is Here. This is Star Sailor and the track is called Alcoholic.
Didn't think I was going to remember this one, and I remembered it 5 seconds in. Like you said, it is a hello to Star Sailor. And yeah, when I saw this on the spreadsheet coming, I was like, oh, Star Sailor track. Shit, they got a hard run. Mm. They got some grief, like. And Do you know what? There was a lot of grief for any indie band at this point, because the ones you've all listed, do you know what I mean? This is probably that grumpy journalist at NME just being completely mean to them for absolutely, you know, no reason. Mm-hmm. But when I listened to this then, I knew all the words in the chorus. And vocally, I really like it. Lyrically, it's very melancholic. And I love the piano in it. I think it's like a really good track, to be fair.
Yeah. I watched the video first, which starts off with the choir bit, then builds up to the big loud bit, which is an interesting way of doing it. I think if I came on the TV and I had to watch a like 2 minute segment of a guy just singing acoustically or, you know, with piano, I wouldn't keep it on very long. I would have probably kept it the same as it was in the single version, where it starts off big, then goes quiet, then gets big again. But I was impressed by it when it finally got going in the video. It feels like quite a big deal when it gets to that place. You know, it's very raw in emotion.
Yeah.
You know, the subject matter of the song is very powerful. The instrumentation backs it in a really powerful way. The thing it reminded me of, and it was familiar to me, but not because of the song itself. It's because it sounds very much like the theme tune of the show Sherlock. Here's a little clip of that.
I know that, actually, that you've said that. I recognise that.
And I kind of also, I thought, now that I've like I've reflected more, it doesn't come across as this as much anymore. But the first thing I got was Jonathan Creek as well.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. So it reminded me of TV programmes before the song. Then the subject matter and the lyrics took over, and I realised actually this is more than just a sort of soundy-like sort of thing. It's actually quite credible and quite good.
Lyrically, I think maybe it's kind of as if they're not as talented songwriters as Ed Sheeran with, you know, like A-Team. Mm. But I think that's kind of what they were going for.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that the story from Ed Sheeran can make it through in his era, where actually things like this were harder to get across, but actually they were very relevant, you know. So like things like, would XFM have existed at this point? So
yeah.
This would have been like something like an XFM audience would have absolutely loved. And the difficulty with XFM is that you've got NME grilling you at this era for anything that you kind of put on the radio to. But I'm pretty happy with this one. I'm glad that I heard it again, because I haven't heard that probably since it was on the radio.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That has never popped into my life in 20 something years. Like, were you familiar with it at all, or are you just completely brand new to it?
I feel like pretty brand new. On that point of, you know, you haven't heard it since, which stations would play this now? But because there is that kind of backlash against them.
Yeah.
Where do they fit it? Where do they fit in the radio landscape? Do they fit anywhere? Because they're not a Six Music.
No.
They're not Radio X.
No.
There's nowhere really for them.
No, and the thing is, there's some really nice indie songs. Well, actually, funny enough, one of my mates posted during the week that he was looking for happy indie songs because he can't find them because they don't really exist. And I was sitting thinking, oh, let me think of a really sad indie song. And I thought immediately of Athlete Wires, which even just think about it makes me fill up because it's so sad. Mm. But yeah, it's very... Is there like a graveyard for these tracks?
Mm.
No. That maybe you wouldn't have foreseen in 2001 when you were an indie band. But
well,
yeah, because like I never hear Ash either, but then I don't tend to listen to many indie stations as much anyway, because when I do listen now, it's bloody for work reasons and all of that kind of crap. But
yeah, no, well, it's funny because you've not quite this era, but a few years later on, there becomes a genre in the charts called landfill indie, which is these kind of very disposable indie bands. I'm trying to think of one off the top of my head that's kind of like a really iconic one. Let's quickly see
the Kooks.
The Kooks, you'd say they probably come up as one of them. It's a bit of a punching bag term, and earlier, no, last year, God, time's changing so strange. There was a Vice article about landfill indie, and they were talking about it in quite a snobby way, but also kind of a loving way. But it is kind of seen as a detrimental term for like bands that were big in the mid-noughties, and this predates all of that. But I wonder if there is like an indie landfill, to flip that phrase. Bands like Star Sailor, you know, like where do they go? What do they do? Mm-hmm. And by the looks of it, they're still doing stuff. They released an album, I think, as recent as a few years ago, and they're still doing stuff. And James Walsh, who's the front man of Star Sailor, has written for other artists and that kind of thing. So, yeah, interesting. You've mentioned Ash. Let's talk about Ash and Mogwai. I was reading an article in NME from 2001 where James Walsh said he'd been talking to Chris Martin from Coldplay, just to get some advice on how to handle the fame and how to handle the criticism that they've been receiving. Mm-hmm. Ash and Mogwai were just two of the names that are mentioned in this article of bands who said and did quite unpleasant things. One of them kind of said the name Star Sailor at their gig and got everyone to boo, sort of thing. And then there's other incidents that I've read about as well. It just seems like such a weird culture amongst the indie scene, and it still exists now. Like there's bands that you'd think would be on the same page with things, you know, politically or socially or just like sonically, and they just get at each other and, you know, always sniping at each other. Just like, what's the who gains from this apart from you look like an arsehole? But I guess there's some bands where looking like an arsehole is actually kind of like an endearing feature.
Yeah, there is a knack to it. But funnily enough, what did you call that era of indie? What's it called?
Landfill indie.
Landfill indie. I need to remember that, right? Because not knowing that that was a term and that was a thing, I felt frustrated with that whole thing at one point. So, like, I was kind of sick of Razorlight. I was sick of the Kooks and all of that kind of stuff during the later end of the decade. And as much as I enjoyed the tracks, I was just sick of the saturation of it. And actually, my show and my brand called Dance Revolution is completely born out of that. And the whole reason why I called it Dance Revolution is because I was sick of the indie crap and there needed to be a dance music revolution. Mm. And dance music wasn't getting a look in. And my whole show was born to be a platform for these kind of songs that weren't getting the play. And that's because, like, Galaxy had started to evolve, and Galaxy, that used to be a dance music station, I remember they had a jingle. It's like, we don't play McFly. Fast forward a few years and they were playing indie tracks because mm-hmm. they had to start mm-hmm. playing hits. And then because that had died. So that Landfill Indie, which I didn't realize until this moment, was actually the whole inspiration behind Dance Revolution.
Yeah.
Like that's really odd that we've just discovered that. But
yeah,
fascinating. And I'm glad I've got an actual phrase because I can now explain that to people without being like, do you remember whenever the Kooks were just doing their stuff and Razorlight America was just on the radio every single time? So that's quite nice. But yeah, I do. There's a lot of questions around this era and how to pull off being in an indie band. You know,
yeah.
Indie bands are very difficult to style and to market because, you know, you need to be unique. And I think like the 1975 have pulled it off really well. And I work on a station, you know, that is very big on indie music in many respects and independent artists. And we've got so much more diversity now, whereas everything in this era and through the noughties was maybe a little bit samey.
Yeah.
And still very much, you need a narrative for your band, pick your narrative, and they weren't very far removed from each other across the decade.
I don't listen to much alternative music on the radio because I haven't found a station that plays it without snobbery.
Yes.
I haven't found a station that doesn't just unapologetically like music. I think there's so many of the stations that play that kind of music, there's always kind of a caveat. There's always like, we love the music we play, but everyone else can fuck off. And I've mentioned it's funny you mentioned 1975, because I've mentioned them before as a band that, you know, have such an adored fan base. But if you're not in that fan base, people generally think they're just like shit and scum and wish they would go and like die and kill themselves, sort of thing. Like, that's the vibe that you get from some fan groups with the 1975. And it's so like perplexing that some of these bands whose fan base is all built around peace and love, one band in particular, I mentioned them before, but I haven't mentioned them by name before. I'll say it now, Idols fans, I love the band Idols, but their fans, their fan group, can turn on bands very quickly. And there's a contradiction in your argument there. It's like peace and love, but also Matty Healy should hang himself.
Oh no.
I've seen bits and pieces of that kind of thing before. Anyway, Landfill Indie, to go back to it, because it's worth mentioning, because there's so much of it to come over the next 9 years. Like, indie does dominate the charts for large periods, like 2005, 2006, bands come in. One band that comes in that isn't Landfill, Editors.
Oh, yeah.
Really excited for them to come in.
I have an Editors album. You wouldn't believe it, would you?
No, I wouldn't. Maximo Park.
Love them.
Are not a Landfill band. They're brilliant. Mm-hmm. Futureheads, not a Landfill band. Here is a thing I found on thestudentroom.co.uk from 11 years ago, which lists some of those bands. Stereophonics. I'm reading this all, you know, verbatim. Mm-hmm. Stereophonics. The Libertwats. I mean, sorry, the Libertines.
Oh yeah,
the
Libertines. Shit.
Or anything Pete Doherty.
Oh god, yes.
The Cocks. Sorry, the Kooks.
Yeah.
Pigeon Detectives. They were good at the time, but I wouldn't go back to them now. The Wombats.
I liked some of the Wombat stuff, very commercial, but yeah.
Yeah, me too. But that's the thing. I think you can like these tracks, but it doesn't make them not Landfill Indie.
Yeah.
I think you can still like them, but that they are of a genre. Landfill Indie, get used to it. It's going to be sticking around for a while.
Based on your conversations now about Landfill Indie and music snobbery, are you in a position where you would happily sit and go and watch White Chicks for me?
It's not a snobbery thing, White Chicks.
It looks really offensive. Yeah, it's like it's the most like twisted racist thing I think you can probably ever imagine, you know what I mean? Yeah, but Terry Crews and it's brilliant.
Nice try though. That's a sneaky attempt to get us to watch that thing. I respect the hustle. Well done. Yeah, fair enough. Some interesting tracks there. If you had to pick a best out of those, could you pick one? I know this isn't canon in the series, but
yeah, I don't know. Oh, I can probably go the other way and say that not Marty Pello,
yeah,
and not Dane Byers.
I like the Dane track. Yeah,
I do like it, but yeah. Marty Pello really not me, and Dane is me, but it's. He's right at the bottom of the ones that I like.
Okay.
What about you?
That's fine. I'd probably say if I had to pick a best, I'd maybe say Dane, actually. I feel like he deserves it.
Yeah.
I feel like he showed potential there in that track, and it's just a shame that no follow-up really came. And I think that Shaggy song isn't as bad as Angel,
no.
Which I didn't like at all. So it's a bit of a reprieve for him. Nice female vocal on there. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's canny. We've still got October, November, December of 2001 to cover. Some big tunes still to come. There may be another one or two TNNX episodes in the meantime just to squeeze out some of the things that don't fit in the main episodes, but if you like them, do let us know and we'll keep at them.
Thank you.
Again, it's just a case of time for us. It's busy. I'm busy, you're busy, everyone's busy. It's just we're all stuck in the house, isn't it?
Do you know what? It depends how sucked in we get to the tracks.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we can't do anything about how many tracks are released per week.
No.
Sometimes too. And yeah, it just depends. So sometimes we can get through 3 weeks worth of tracks or 3 weeks worth of releases. Some weeks we can only do one. It just depends on how busy a week it is. And, you know, we are in an interesting competition zone. 2001, things really did heat up. So yeah, I think there's lots to be said. A lot of changes in society as well that we like to acknowledge. But, you know, without all of the stuff now, we can't be racing towards a Lady Gaga at the end of the decade.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Absolutely, certainly. So thank you for listening. We'll see you on Friday for the main episode. Just to give a little bit of a tease as to what's coming up, I've got some Britney Spears.
Ooh.
I'm a Slave for You is the track, which is the one that's kind of like yeah, breathy and just a different sound for her. She sounds very grown up, or maybe just like still young but trying to sound like a grown up. Is my vibe of...
It's her Christina Aguilera Dirty, isn't it, really? Because it was...
Yeah.
We were shocked. I remember being shocked by that one, like, because I was like, what's she doing? But yeah, exciting times, and I'm looking forward to this era of Britney.
Join us on Friday. Thank you, Scott, as always.
Thank you,
Take care, look after yourself, and we'll see you on Friday. Cheerio.